This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Anybody heard from Greg Olson? We've been waiting.
Greg.
I don't know. Fox, CBS Sports, Bills, what Washington. Happened? Anybody heard from him?
What happened to our correspondent that was perhaps going to trespass into first class and get us our exclusive one-on-one?
We had the guy that was in coach who was looking up at that great jawline of Greg Olson. We haven't heard anything from him. We did get our first sign, though, that free agency might be awfully expensive. And that is DJ Humphreys, who is a former first-round pick, a left tackle from the Arizona Cardinals, signed a three-year $45 million deal, or agreed to a three-year $45 million deal that he is expected to sign. Why is that important for Seattle? Well, it kind of sets the price, and you look at Jermaine Ifedi, who's entering free agency, and I don't think any of us expected him back, but if he's going to go for $12, $13, $14 million, if Humphreys is going to go for $15, I certainly think that Ifedi is excited about getting $10 million or more per year when he gets there. And that's the question for Seattle, is not how much is Ifedi going to cost, but how lucrative is this market? And if that's an indication of what's to come, it's going to be pretty darn lucrative.
If he's gone, you would imagine Ifedi gets similar money. And I think that the Seahawks are going to have to answer this question themselves. What are they going to do about their offensive line and some of the pieces that leave? There is a real possibility that four of five pieces that were starters for this team last year ultimately end up elsewhere, depending on if the Seahawks want to play some cap games and perhaps save themselves a little bit of space to maybe go after someone like Jadeveon Clowney or somebody else. At right tackle, that is a question right now. Shoot, left tackle future down the road with Dwayne Brown getting up there in age, that's also a question too. But I think, Danny, that this makes it very, very difficult for them to be aggressive in free agency when it comes to fixing that position or adding to that position. I think now it might, in fact, put some pressure on them to do something about the position in the draft early on with one of their first four picks.
Let's be clear when we talk about free agency and spending what we're talking about, which is the first wave. DJ Humphrey's signing is a sign that the first wave is going to be very expensive. That when players get into the market and have multiple suitors, these are the deals that get done within the first 2 days of teams being able to talk to players. That first wave, because what happens is you've got two teams that are going after one player and the bidding escalates. And the reason that it gets done quick is because the team that doesn't get that player, well, they want to know that they can use that money on someone else. So you have this first wave of deals that get talked about and discussed. If DJ Humphreys is going for $15 million a year, that first wave could be very, very lucrative. DJ Humphreys has missed one out of every three games over the past four seasons.
Ooh, that's not
he good. He didn't play his first season at all. He's been injury plagued. He had a really good year last year, and he just cashed in. What this means is that for someone like Jadeveon Clowney, who is going to be part of that first wave of free agency, this could be a really lucrative market. And that question about how high do you go? Is it doesn't matter what it costs, you've got to keep him? Does it become, well, man, this might get too rich for our blood? Because there's the possibility that Jadeveon Clowney is going to come in looking and possibly becoming the highest paid defensive player in the league. Do you go that high to keep him?
I think long and hard about it. I think I do it, in fact. I just don't think a world without this guy is going to give you a chance to win a Super Bowl next season. And yeah, the defense for the Seahawks was not anywhere close to being good enough last year, but do you really want to press the reset button entirely with your pass rush? It's one thing to say, okay, let's add some new pieces, but this is the one guy that teams had the game plan for on your front seven. Specifically on the defensive line. It was not Jaron Reed. It was not Ziggy Ansah. It was never L.J. Collier. It was never Quentin Jefferson, Rasheen Green, any of those other guys, Puna Ford, Al Woods. It was only Jadeveon Clowney. You can press the reset button at a lot of those other positions, but if you press the reset button at this too, good luck replacing that this offseason, let alone improving that unit this offseason.
Man, and that's really the question you're facing as the Seattle Seahawks. Your defense wasn't great with Jadeveon Clowney. It's going to be worse without him, and he might eat up a sizable chunk of that money. What does it mean for Seattle? We'll see if they get more creative. Seattle has typically, over the past 10 years, not been a big part of that first wave of free agency. They haven't gotten into the bidding wars. They've matched big offers previously to retain guys, whether it was Red Bryan, who visited the New England Patriots in 2012, or it was Michael Bennett, who they held on to. But they've not typically been that big spender, and the early signs are this could be a very lucrative market. The other story that's happening is that we're hearing reactions from Major League Baseball players. The Mariners are a team that has a full squad workout today, and people being asked about the Houston Astros and what should happen to them. And Nick Markakis has a very medieval style punishment that he would like to administer.
To see something like that, it's damaging to baseball. You know, it's anger. I feel like every single guy over there needs a beating. You know, it's wrong. They're messing with people's careers. You know, I know we're all competitive and we're out there competing, but there's right ways to do it and wrong ways to do it. And I 100% disagree with the way they did it. You know, there's a lot of people that were hurt by it. And it was wrong.
What did they get, a spanking?
Corporal punishment. All bets are off. It made me think of The Simpsons when Homer Simpson decides to combat graffiti with, well, loading up a pillowcase full of doorknobs.
Mr. Simpson, how do you respond to the charge that petty vandalism such as graffiti is down 80%, while heavy sack beatings are up a shocking 900%?
Oh, people can come up with statistics to prove anything, Kent. 40% of all people know that.
So I don't know if we could actually approve of corporal punishment being administered, but Nick Markakis says they all deserve a beating.
Here's the sad thing. It would appease more people than what happened. That actually would appease more people. Going back to barbarism that is probably better suited for medieval times is a more effective solution than what the Astros received, which was losing a manager and losing a general manager and feeling bad about what happened. Oh, shucks. Poor little Alex Bregman.
One of the most memorable, I think everybody knows it, the shot heard around the world, which Bobby Thompson hit. Bobby Thompson, there's a great deal of evidence that he knew what was coming, and that whole year that signs were being relayed using a telescope and a buzzer out in, somebody was watching from a different building and relaying what the sign said, and that in that case, Bobby Thompson knew the pitch that Ralph Branca was throwing him. I think Thompson had always denied it, but Branca came to believe by the time he died that he did think that Thompson knew what pitch was coming. So it's not exactly unprecedented. Having it as organized as the Astros did, and honestly, I think kind of like the Patriots with the deflated footballs, if there wasn't a trash can, if they had hit something else other than the fact that they're smashing a trash can, I think that's part of what makes it so outrageous is how they were communicating it. It's interesting to me that this has set baseball off in a way that other things have not. That even players by and large didn't get indignant about other guys using steroids. They did kind of. Right. But I don't think, maybe it was because they were afraid of fighting Barry Bonds, like big steroid. They're like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to threaten to beat up the Hulk. But I don't remember guys coming out like this and saying that any player that took steroids needed to be beaten.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember either. It does feel that there is this very strange brotherhood with baseball where, even though this was supposedly an open secret across baseball for a couple of years, no one ever said anything about it or did anything about it that actually would result in consequences until Mike Fiers finally spoke up. And I think that's part of it, too. For whatever reason, there is just this weird, is it a code of honor amongst baseball players that, yeah, you might be doing something shady, but guess what? No one's going to snitch on you. You're just going to have to live with that. I think there are some players that would definitely look back at their careers and say, well, maybe if I had done a little bit of the juice, my career would have been a little bit better. I would have gone a little bit further. And maybe now they have that feeling. But you're right. It's weird that of all the things that have happened in baseball over the years, this is the one thing that seems to be unifying the entire league in terms of them just being completely outraged. And we're talking about players right now to the point where, honestly, I don't think that a players' association really might have had a leg to stand on here when it comes to an appeal should the Astros have been punished more than what they got and started to appeal it. Because it doesn't feel like many players have any sympathy for them.
Well, it's going to create some weird situations, too. Like the LA Dodgers are obviously the team that most people are talking to about the Astros, with good reason. That's the team that the Astros beat in the World Series. There's the most clear. That is the 2017 season when the bulk of this occurred. But they look at it. The Dodgers just acquired Mookie Betts, who's coming from a team in Boston that, while it hasn't been spelled out yet, first of all, we know that there was something involving Apple Watches that happened with them.
Yes.
Marco Gonzalez has complained openly after a game about them picking something up and being able to decode what was happening and saying, hey, they knew what was coming. And Alex Cora, their manager, they mutually parted ways, but it was, hey, it's better for everybody if you just vamoose because this is about to get really stinky and you're going to get implicated here. That's the Red Sox are essentially walking around with their hands in their pockets whistling right now, right? Like, no, nothing to see here. We didn't do anything wrong. Like, there's going to be the Astros. It wasn't that this one single team did everything. When it comes to
right.
science dealing.
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, there's still an investigation ongoing with the Red Sox, and I imagine that
nobody believes
could.
Anything happened. Do you think anything will happen there? They're going to come out and they're going to say anything that was done was minor. I don't think we're going to hear any new names.
Maybe there's an official suspension announced for Alex Cora, because I don't think we have that yet. We only have that for Hinch and for Luno. We have just Cora being fired. We have Carlos Beltran just being fired, essentially, but they called the mutual parting
of ways.
Well,
they just left, yeah. Like, hey, you're not going to be able to, you know that job you got, you're not going to be able to come back here anymore.
The funny thing is, the Red Sox, they've named their manager the interim guy. I mean, there is actually a world where maybe Alex Cora gets this job back.
No way.
He's the interim manager. Like, why would you announce your new manager as the interim manager? I would keep an eye on that.
Oh, really? I can't imagine.
Mark that down.
Do you want to hear my conspiracy theory for why we haven't heard anything else on any other teams or
Please.
Players, those investigations be open? They're waiting to see if somebody can come up with footage that determines how they were cheating. Because the only reason that they were forced to act when it came to the Astros is because people were actually able to document how the cheating occurred. They were able to count the garbage can strikes. So they're waiting to see if anything similarly is going to be unearthed that will publicly expose how the cheating's done. And as long as no one's ever able to show or document instances of the cheating, they're going to be content to go through. They're waiting to see if anything else gets shown first. They don't have any interest in actually exposing what's going on.
No, because this goes further than just one team. This is I feel very confident in believing that, yes, the Astros probably went further than any of the other teams, but I think every team that was in contention in baseball was doing some degree of this. And I feel like now, the further and further that you go down the rabbit hole, the worse things you're going to find. And I think that's bad for the league if they actually give everyone the truth as they claim to be doing right now, because it's only going to make more and more people question the results of the past few seasons.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's now time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Ashley.
Hey, you guys.
Yo.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be back. It's been more than a minute. I was about to say how
many,
but it's been a month. Solid month. Happy to be here with you guys. All right,
we're
ready for some stories?
You.
Thank you. All right, this just in, the Drew Brees, he posted on Instagram a picture of him hiking alongside what looks like to be an ocean, a large body of water, with a caption of, "My feelings about the 2020 season. I look forward to the grind and the journey, for the reward at the end will be worth it. Love you, Who Dat Nation. Let's make another run at it."
So Drew Brees is back?
Yes.
That's what it sounds like.
Which also means that Teddy Bridgewater is gone. I think he's going to get paid somewhere. And I think this was over the internet. I saw this on the mean streets of the internet, that maybe Bridgewater could be looking for a $30 million a year kind of contract, which would be crazy if
Good
someone
for him
actually
if he
gave
can
it.
Get it.
That's a fair point. Yes, I agree on that front. I also wonder what happens with Taysom Hill if the Saints decide to trade him, because Hill has basically said, "I want to have the opportunity to be a franchise quarterback. And if it's not here, then it should be elsewhere."
I don't think anybody's going to choose to sign up for the Taysom Hill experience full-time. I don't think anybody's going to pay him enough because he's a restricted free agent. I think Taysom Hill will be back with the Saints on a one-year contract. As far as Teddy Bridgewater, where do you think he goes?
It's a good question, because I don't know that he will end up being a I don't know that there's a definitive place for him to start where he'd be on a contending football team.
Miami? Finished well.
He is from there. But I still think that when it comes down to it, you're probably going to see a young quarterback as the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins.
Jacksonville's got a young quarterback they like.
Yeah. The options are really like Chicago, Carolina, Indianapolis, the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Oakland Raiders. And I think the big question is, which of those situations is most advantageous for a young quarterback that has not really had much of an opportunity to be a starter after that catastrophic knee injury that he suffered with the Vikings? I would say, of all those situations, if I'm Teddy Bridgewater, I'm very intrigued by the idea of going to Las Vegas and playing with John Gruden and seeing what John Gruden can maybe get out of me and competing against Derek Carr.
The Cleveland Browns, they cut four players to create $13 million in the cap space. What do you guys think they're going to do with that money?
Ooh.
Do you think a player, Danny, would want to sign with the Browns this offseason after the mess, the circus that they were last year?
Yes. I don't think anybody's going to rule it out because I think most teams around the league, most players around the league believe they're really talented. I don't know who's most likely for them to grab. They've got a lot of talent at wide receiver already. They've got a rush end in Myles Garrett. Maybe it's another pass rushing defensive end. They're going to have to save up. I'm not sure what they're going to do with that, but I would expect the Browns to be one of the more aggressive teams. They've got a new coach and a new general manager there.
If I'm the Browns, the idea that you floated at the very end, looking at another pass rusher, is the way that they should go. They should pair Myles Garrett up with somebody else who's a good pass rusher. Because if you have a tandem like that, it makes up for a lot of issues on defense. It perhaps makes up for a lot of issues that Baker Mayfield's bringing to the table on offense. And maybe there's someone that they could bring in on the offensive side of things that gets Baker Mayfield back on his good habits. I've read some things this offseason that maybe Baker Mayfield got away from being the guy that he was his rookie season. I don't know who's
causing that. He wasn't cocky enough? I thought he just had Larry the Cable Guy for his coach. I thought that was the problem.
That's what Browns fans better hope, that it was that, and it wasn't a change to his habits.
Speaking of one Myles Garrett, Mike Tomlin is defending Mason Rudolph and was not really happy with Garrett's interview with Mina Kimes. Here's a clip.
When these allegations returned this past weekend, I thought it was appropriate that Mason is properly defended. It was a thorough investigation done by us and the National Football League. I don't think that was represented during that piece. These accusations are serious, not only in terms of Mason Rudolph's character, but his professional pursuits. Nobody on that field, as a member of the Cleveland Browns or the Pittsburgh Steelers, corroborated what was said by Myles Garrett. That was founded by us and the National Football League, and at no point during that piece this weekend that was stated. Myself, personally, I was on the field immediately after that altercation and subsequently after the game. I got a lot of personal relationships within that organization over there in Cleveland. At no point did anyone within that organization come forward and say, Mike, heads up, we got a situation here or something of that nature that you would expect that comes with those type of allegations.
He's pretty adamant there. And I don't want to accuse Mason Rudolph of something when we don't have any evidence at our disposal. What I will say is, much like when it comes to Carlos Correa looking at the Rob Manfred report and saying that this was found, an investigation done by the NFL and the Steelers releasing publicly information about a player having done something racist on the field, I have a hard time believing that if that were to have happened, that the NFL and that the Steelers would make that information public.
Right. The NFL would have an interest in not, they're not, it's not in their best interest to be forthright about everything that was said. And just because they couldn't prove definitively that it happened doesn't mean it didn't. I don't know what happened. And I don't know if the two guys that are involved knew what happened. Is it possible that Mason Rudolph said it? Yeah. Is it possible that Myles Garrett misheard it? And that's not what he actually said? Yeah. Playing tackle football and they're guys shouting at each other and I don't know what happened. I do know that it certainly appeared that Myles Garrett believed or felt that something was said to him to provoke a reaction that severe. But I don't know what happened.
Yeah. We're going to have to wait and wait and wait. And I doubt we'll ever find out what actually happened.
I don't think we'll ever know. It's just one of those. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what was said.
After a helmet-to-helmet hit in the third preseason game last fall, Redskins tight end Jordan Reed, he is still in concussion protocol.
It's very scary. Yeah. I mean, that's...
I feel for him.
Months. It's terrible.
He's a talented player, and it's a shame. Like, he, I think more than perhaps any player at that position, has just been really unfortunate. But that's the reality of that violent position. You are just constantly in car accident-style collisions with defensive linemen that you're blocking, with linebackers down the field that are hitting you as you're trying to catch passes, safeties over the middle of the field as well. And he just keeps on getting hit in the absolute worst part. I wonder, as if you're someone like Jordan Reed, you think about all the money that you could potentially make if you're out there, because people still recognize his talent. Is it still worth it to keep on going out there? That's a tough decision to make if you're a player, because I think for the most part you don't want to hang it up, but you also have to think about the long-term consequences. I wouldn't want to be in Jordan Reed's shoes. I'm sure he wants to get back in the game, but it doesn't really feel like that's in his best interest.
Life-changing hit. And I think that every player that plays football knows the possibility that that would happen. And I think most guys believe it will come later, further down the line, yep, any sacrifices they make. Best wishes to him. I hope he gets healthy and hope he makes the right decision for him. I'm not sure what that is, but man, that's certainly scary. The idea
Feel
that
for
months
him.
Later, a head injury has not healed. It is Danny and Gallant. Paul, we spent a lot of time talking about commissioners today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that today's commissioner is, well, it's not nearly as powerful as it used to be. I think I've got an idea about how to change that.
Oh.
We'll do that next year on Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
All right. Paul, we talk about commissioners. We believe that that person should have, well, they should have the best interest of the game, right? That's what we think of. The commissioner is neither a representative of the owners nor of the players. He's the person to oversee the game. That's the concept that I have of what a good commissioner is. I think the reality is that today's commissioner works for the owners. Today's commissioner is about improving the business of the sport as a whole. And in that way, he's much more representative of the owners than he is of the players.
I don't disagree with that at all. I think that that is something that it has become. And I think for some people, I think that they want it. And I will specifically point at fans. I think that fans want that person to be something more than that. Now, what's funny is it has worked out very, very, I think, poorly in the National Football League as far as that goes. But I think right now, people that follow baseball wish that there was a Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis-esque figure from 1919-1920, a former federal judge who became the commissioner of baseball and who decided, yep, I'm going to ban the people that were involved in the 1919 Black Sox scandal. And this is a guy who was tough. I mean, he made it tough on Babe Ruth. This is a guy who, like, he has, if you look back, he's probably the strongest commissioner in the history of sports.
What if we created a system to have a commissioner with power like that again, who was not beholden to either the players or the owners, but was beholden to the fans?
Beholden to the fans. Interesting. How would we do this?
Federally appointed commissioners who run for election. So I guess they wouldn't be federally appointed. Sports leagues exist because of antitrust legislation. They are allowed to run monopolies, which would be illegal in other industries. They're allowed to do this because people like sports. You don't want to have an unregulated league because that would create anarchy, where you would have players should be able, in a given professional league, they're required to work. There's reasons to have antitrust legislation that allow sports leagues to exist as we currently enjoy them. What if, as a condition of that, you would have an elected, there's a position that has to be elected. And I said federally appointed, but I mean elected.
Okay.
That you have to run for, you would have different guys that would run for commissioner of the various leagues.
What parties would they be a part of? Is this part of the two-party system, or do we have sports parties that come out of nowhere?
All of these things are delicious. I came up with this idea about 15 minutes ago, and I think it's genius.
I love it. Well, here's the thing, Danny. I actually could see that being a reality down the road, because as sports gambling becomes more and more legal across the United States of America, the government might actually have a vested interest in making sure that everything is done all hunky-dory. So, yeah, there actually could be something like this down the road.
Now, you would ask the question is who's eligible to vote? It was like fans who register, just like it is in the political system. The same age requirements will apply, like residency rules, like all of those things. But you have to register to be able to vote in your Major League Baseball, your NBA, your NFL, your NHL.
How do you register?
Heck, we'll have a form. There'll be a voter database, the same way you register to vote. Like, how do you register to vote? We're going to use this. It is going to be an actual election. What parties will be? You can campaign as any party. I'm going to be the pint of blood party. You cheat, you get banned forever. Like, here's what you can expect from me.
The punishment party.
Yeah, absolutely. There could be the whole old school. Like, I support the unwritten rule book. I vow not to punish beanballs. Like, in that way, you can open it up, and by having fans can elect the kind of commissioner that they want, because ultimately, that's what you want from a commissioner who's going to act in the interest of the fans, right?
Yes.
Now, typically, we trust that acting in the best business of the sport, which is what today's commissioners do, are overall acting in the interest of the fans, but I think we all know they act for the owners. So I actually think that my genius idea of having elected commissioners would give the game back to the fans.
I'm curious as to the parties that would develop and the factions that would be fighting with one another to get to this position. I mean, there's definitely going to be a corporal punishment a party. Nick Markakis is going to strong arm that one.
Everybody deserves beatings.
Yes, everyone deserves beatings. And then there will also be some people who are like, well, let's just let it. Let live and let live, man. You just got to move on, man. It's the past, man. I'm curious as to how that would go. Would it be for every single league, or would there be one person that oversees all the commissioners across leagues? I think it should be like that, where it's one position, and that person
is a sports czar?
Yes, an actual sports czar. But we probably can't call him the czar, because that obviously derives from the term
drug
Caesar, which you don't want to have anybody that's...
isn't czar Russian?
Czar is Russian for Caesar, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
No, I didn't realize that.
Well, I think most terms for king came from some version of Caesar, if you go further east. And I'm totally BSing on that front. But I know Czar stands for Caesar.
From the 206, that's a horrible idea to have government involved in regulating the sport. Split the power between the owners and the players and the fans. Sorry, Danny, your idea is not genius. Maybe there's some things to be worked out there. I definitely don't want it to be a bureaucrat that's running things, but there's got to be a way to let the fans have a say in how the sport is governed and the kind of punishments that are there. Because the one thing coming out of this, I don't think what Rob Manfred did is adequate. I don't think that what he would have done. The alternative, though, and I think what he could have done is by stripping a World Series title. I think that's dumb too. I think that's a dumb way to punish a team for cheating, is by going back and say all those games you won, you didn't really win, and we're going to take away a piece of a trophy from you.
If we were to do a popular vote based off of what Manfred had done, the vast majority of people would say that he did not do nearly enough. In fact, I would think some people in Houston would even feel the same way. They probably think to themselves right now, man, it's pretty fortunate that there is no player being suspended for this coming season and that there are no real other punishments outside of the fact that we had to move on from a general manager and move on from a manager.
Would anybody feel strongly and well about a commissioner's? Do people support Deflategate? Like, do people look back? Because I think fans, like, in that way, I don't know if we have a realistic. The Deflategate punishment was flawed. Like,
Ignored science.
Yeah, it ignored science. And I think most people look at it and say they deserve to get punished because they don't like the Patriots.
Yes.
And they enjoyed seeing Tom Brady have to sit 4 games.
Yes.
But there were, like, serious flaws in the way that investigation was conducted.
Oh, you think? That was the stupidest story in the history of sports. I strongly believe it. There are other quarterbacks doing things to their balls as well. And guess what? That was the one that just happened to have text messages that Tom Brady refused to turn over because he did not want to give his phone over to Goodell, because guess what would have happened? All of his personal information would have somehow been leaked. And then we'd have, like, Tom Brady and Giselle explicit text, probably. Like, I think that would have come out of it. I think that's why he didn't turn it in. Whatever the case, that one was a dumb one. And I do think that that's the danger that you perhaps run into if you do make it about the people deciding. Because I think everyone's in agreement, like, okay, the Astros did something wrong here. But what if it's something that's a little bit more nefarious and we're talking, or less nefarious, but it's coming from one of the top teams in sports, which people generally do not like? Say, who would you say the equivalent of this in the NBA is right now? I suppose you could say the Golden State Warriors still have that kind of vibe about them. Like, if something happened with them, I think the vast majority of people would be like, yeah, they had Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Screw them. Let's send them back to the Stone Age forever. And I think there are a lot of fans who would be like that.
If you're an NBA fan who doesn't like players being able to dictate the structure of teams and be able to move it, you could elect a commissioner that would be about, like, restoring franchise integrity in the NBA. It would be someone that came up with a plan to stall different player movements. Okay. I think that there would be a ways to remedy some of the things that we see in leagues that we don't like, that I would actually, I think that this idea is part genius.
We need to flesh it out some more, but considering that you came up with it like, what, 20 minutes ago?
Yeah. We're going to elect a sports czar. And I do like the idea of the sports czar. You can have a commissioner, but there are certain things he has to run by the sports czar, and the sports czar can say, nope, that's terrible. Go back and fix this right now.
I honestly like the idea of someone who can punish anyone. He can punish a commissioner. He can punish an owner. He can punish a player, because that is something that does not exist. And you know what would happen with the sports czar? Bye-bye, James Dolan, and the New York Knicks become the Seattle Supersonics. Boom.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to raise flags next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Got a lot of choices for today. We're going to raise flags, throw flags. Lots of different talks about cheating and punishments and what would be acceptable. I'm going to start out by raising some flags. First, I'm going to raise a flag to Paul. I think a postseason ban is a much better punishment. Banning a team from playing in the postseason, we don't do it anymore. Why don't we do it? It'd be a great punishment.
We've never done it at the professional level. And I looked into that Black Sox scandal to see if maybe the White Sox were prevented. No, it was just the 8 players. They were put on an ineligible list and they were never to be heard from again. It's really, I think, fascinating that we have never seen this happen with a professional sports team. And I don't think Manfred has the stones to be the guy that actually is the first one to do it. I think he has proven that he is attempting to please everyone kind of person, and in doing so, please nobody kind of guy. So he wasn't going to do it, but it should happen at some point. Why not? I mean, that's a real ramification. You're basically saying that a regular season that a team plays is utterly meaningless and pointless.
Got to play for pride.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the stories for the first month? We're going to go out and show them we're the best, and we're gonna do everything we can and let them have all the doubts later.
Yep.
Funny, and they kept him out of the playoffs.
And then a couple of losses later, the entire team falls apart from the inside out. Essentially, the Saints had the closest thing, probably, Danny, to a postseason ban, because they lost a head coach over the course of a season. And, like, that's about as bad as it gets. Because we're talking, I mean, this is a very important sport with coaching. Like, basketball, baseball, it's just not the same.
It is true. Lydia, flags.
I'm going to have to throw a flag. It's going to be involving the Astros. I think, one, it's a two-parter. One, that they still refuse to use the word cheating. Maybe that could be part of their punishment. Make them come out and say that they cheated. Because
I'm
not one of
cheated.
Those yeah. single players has actually used that word. And I think that's a coordinated effort on their part so that they never have to admit that they did.
It's the first thing that teams or leagues will tell players when they coach them on social media. Do not repeat accusations. If they ask you about an accusation, never repeat it. And if you say something that you're being questioned about, never repeat what you initially said.
But that also is a bigger issue in my mind, because that, to me, still says they don't think what they did was wrong. We broke the rules. We didn't cheat the game. We broke the rules. We got caught, but I don't think that we cheated. I won't put it in those words. And then also, the victimization, now that the story is sort of turning to the Astros being the plucky underdog in this thing, is, if that's a storyline in 2020, that's
certainly going to bug me. And then Rob Manfred also, you know, taking one for the team and being a bit of a martyr there as well. Like, thankfully, we had the intestinal fortitude to do this.
Yeah,
whoa, like your job? To do your job?
That was the word, intestinal fortitude.
Intestinal fortitude.
We showed true strength.
We did nothing. We suspended two people that got fired. Yeah! We showed them and sort of claimed
like they had done that as well. I mean, two people lost their jobs. Yeah, but not because of you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's actually a good point as well. I do like the idea, though, that they're just sitting around. Hey, have they found anything about the Red Sox yet? Because until somebody finds something, do we have to do anything? Or do we just wait until John Boy goes through every second of video and finds out different trash can bangs, and then we'll get in trouble? If we don't hear any evidence, we're not address it,
though. I mean, that's probably what they're waiting for, right?
Completely.
Because they don't want to do the research. But that's what's funny, is a crazy fan with enough time on their hands can easily figure the trash can banging side of things out. I'm sure that for the other allegations of cheating that the Red Sox are currently facing and under investigation for, I'm sure that there is a way to perhaps find some similar embarrassing details to further the actual scandal when it comes to Boston and maybe other teams after that.
Ashley, any flags for the day?
I'm going to raise a flag for the home opener of the Seattle Dragons. The experience looked amazing. Following on social media, I was like, I don't have cable, so I couldn't watch the game, but I had serious FOMO. Like, I'll probably, if I'm in town, I will be at the next game.
Because you gotta
go. It looks incredible, and I want to be part of it.
It was a lot of fun, and I think that there's something to a football game where you're actually close to the action, because that's what's going to happen. You're going to be in the lower bowl, but also just being in a game where people care. Seattle, really, pat yourself on the back for that. I mean, that's a team that's playing its first professional game in the city. They're really, like, there's not a lot of stars or anything like that, but the people showed up, and, I mean, it wasn't just that they showed up. They were good. Like, they were getting up at the right times, making noise at the right times. I was very, very impressed. It was a very cool part of the game, and I hope that it continues next weekend.
Paul, do you have any flags for the day?
Yeah, I mean, we heard Rob Manfred discuss intestinal fortitude. Ashley, I don't know if we could play Rob Manfred's hilarious comments. He's doing a press conference from Brave Spring Training, and in this press conference, he's being asked nonstop about the biggest cheating scandal that we've seen in sports in a long, long time. And Rob Manfred, he doesn't want to be, he's getting tired of answering these questions.
You know, this has been really fun, but I'd like to move on to other topics at some point.
Oh, my God.
That's dumb. That's just dumb. Like, you're going to look like an even bigger weenie if you do that.
Yeah,
I'd like to talk about something else.
Yeah, I mean, like, what? Next thing, are we going to see this like someone's being investigated for murder and he's being interrogated by a lawyer at the stand? He's like, you know, like, I want to move on to some other things. Like, can we ask some other questions here? That's essentially what I'm feeling when I hear Rob Manfred say
this. This has been really difficult for me, so if we could just move it along, that would be great.
It was my understanding this was going to be a fun job. This isn't very fun right now.
I just want to talk about the baseball.
Hey, did you see that the Tampa Bay Rays went out and visited the Boys and Girls Club today? That's an example of our players giving back to the community.
Hey, have you seen the pitchers and catchers having a catch outside? It's fantastic. I have always wanted to have a catch.
There is a fantastic phrase, and I first read it in a book by an older New York Times reporter who talks about the housebroken press. And there is no press corps more housebroken than the sporting press. And I say that as someone who has been a part of that and who has very much been in the housebroken. Just ask the appropriate questions. And when these guys actually have to answer tougher questions, you can see how, like, unfun. This isn't how it usually goes. Usually you ask me to tell you how great everything is. This isn't fun at all. So it really is enjoyable to watch, like, all of a sudden some of the screws get put to these guys. And they're like, this is not. It was Robert Lipsight that initially came up with that phrase. But it's
I
true.
Love Robert Lipsight. Accidental
Robert
Sports
fantastic.
Sports Writer is a great book.
Yeah. He's and that idea of actually having to answer tough questions is very, very hard. Somebody brought up the idea that if you get caught cheating in colleges from the 206, you have to give back your degree. They don't just let you keep the degree. So maybe there is, maybe I am a little bit off in my idea that you don't go back and change it. I guess if you got to keep, if you lost your degree but got to keep your job at its current salary, that would be kind of like what happened to the Astros if their World Series title was stripped. But it is true in other parts of the country, in other jobs, when you get caught cheating, you do pay a penalty for it.
That's true. And I mean, I think that they have to seriously look at themselves in the mirror and wonder if they find something with the Red Sox, that if they actually do more of a punishment to make up for the lack of a punishment that they gave to the Astros, which would be hilarious because it would also backfire in their face spectacularly. Really, I'm just here for more this league drama. This has been not in a good way, but it's been an interesting couple of weeks in baseball. And when's the last time we've been able to say that in February?
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us. Lydia Cruz, Ashley Cox, thank you so much. Enjoyed having the professor with us, Brock Heward as well. He's Paul Gallant, and he thinks that the Astros' punishment belongs in the trash can that will then be beaten.
And he is Danny O'Neill, and I think he's a big fan of the Nick Markakis beating punishment that he would like to give out. So long, farewell, you'll hear us tomorrow.
Mr. Simpson, how do you respond to the charge that petty vandalism, such as graffiti, is down 80%, while heavy sack beatings are up a shocking 900%?
Oh!